This is the Amateur Skeptics Podcast number 319. I'm your host, Brian. Joining me this evening is Mac.
Good evening. And of course, not pithy tonight.
Okay, well. And of course, the dumbass himself.
Yes, that is a podcast episode in my pocket, and I am happy to see
you. Oh! Sounds like you might be alluding to our masturbation one.
Maybe. We'll see. How's everybody doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
I'm all right.
Are you Stephen Wright? I mean, come on, man.
Not in that. I am in no mood, sir.
You lost your snake, and that's not as sexy as it sounds. He crawled into your life and crawled back out.
And that is essentially what happened. The snake who crawled in from the cold crawled back out.
You know what, though? I mean, here's the thing: is that it one thing it did do is it kind of sent you down a road of kind of a. I mean, I've always loved snakes. I've had boas and I've had pythons and I like these and I like them a lot. I had a black king snake, a black California king that got out of its cage and I never found it.
Yeah.
And so I understand, you know.
Well, you know, the size those things are, I mean, they're incredibly wide, right? California kings.
Yeah, that's
I'm thinking the mattress, aren't I?
Yeah, you're thinking the mattress. So I'm talking about the black California king snake. Beautiful. But yeah, I lost one of those as a kid, but I also had a ball python for years. But unfortunately, that ball python was not captive bred. It was you know in the 80s, and they were still catching them in the wild. So it was wild caught. So it probably had parasites and stuff that were never dealt with properly.
Yeah, and I'm going to be picking up a couple of captive bred garters.
And that's the way to go. I mean, that's far better. I mean, the definitely outlive the snake that, you know, came in from outside.
But essentially what happened was that on the evening of the 21st, my mom's birthday, we had a snake appear in the middle of the living room. And Sam called me in there. And she's like, I think I've got a dead snake here. And I bent down to pick it up and I saw the tongue flick. I said, one part of that is true. That is not a dead snake.
No aggressive behavior or anything, though? It lets you pick it right up, right? Yeah. They're pretty plastic.
It got away from us the first time, but afterwards, she tamed down to being picked up really quick. What we had was a terrestrial garter and the specific subspecies of the terrestrial garter that it was wandering garter. Which appears apt now.
Well, I don't know. That's cool.
Real pretty.
Yeah, but you've got a better enclosure now, and now you're gonna get some captive bred ones. So that's great.
Yep. It definitely she definitely managed to instill me with an appreciation for the class of animals.
I have lots of zebra isopods. I had gotten some that I had purchased, and they came in, and I think I had about 8 of them. But I know that one of them it escaped through the top in a small crack and got fried, and then another one I think I found dead. So I think I had at least 6 alive. And so I went to a reptile expo last week, and I was talking to a lady. She told me she thought they were probably all alive, but she had some zebras. I thought, well, I'll go ahead and buy them. And I said, how many are in a thing? You know, it's $20. She said, oh, there's at least 10 of them. I'll go ahead and do that. I'll fill it out. I didn't look when I was there, but I got home. There could have been closer to 30 in there. She literally just picks up a handful of stuff and puts it in the thing. And as long as she's got 10, she didn't care. And so compared to buying them online, buying them from this local person, she just put a ton of them in. I mean, there's at least 20. It was great.
Brian, for the lay people out there, the zebra isopod he is talking about is more commonly known as the pill bug, the roly-poly, or about 10 other different names.
Right. There's about 5,000 different species of roly-poly pill bug woodlouse. And this particular species is native to southern France.
And they are crustaceans with stiffened gills.
Yep.
But they basically work under the same rules as land hermit crabs, which is that they prefer an environment that is damp, which will make their gills more comfortable and easier to use. But they don't require, you know, being underwater in order to breathe with their gills.
Nope. Yeah, they do. Nope. And of course, you know, I mean, everybody knows that a rule just happened to be black and white. They're pretty cool.
They're mimes. They're French mimes.
They're French. French mimes. Yes.
That's true. Have you?
Yes, that is true.
The one that got out. Did you try putting up an invisible wall?
I did not, but uh, I Instead, I filled the crack with Gorilla Glue.
Okay.
And that pretty much. But I'm building a bigger vivarium, right? And I showed, I put the pictures in there in the chat. So I want dark frogs as well. So I'm building up, you know, I'm building in the enclosure. We'll get the ecosystem all set up, and then I'm gonna start putting some dark frogs in.
That is awesome.
Yep. And then I still want to live, but we'll see. Building
enclosure. So then you're going to invent a shrinking ray and shrink your family down to go on a safari through.
Oh my God, wouldn't that be awesome? Yeah, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. Mm-hmm. It could be a movie.
Could be.
You know, I never thought of that. We could pitch that to somebody.
Could be many movies in a TV series.
Oh, was it? Did it do that too?
They did a short-term TV series. Yeah.
All right, well, we better.
I think I kind of remember seeing the tail of one of those episodes at some point.
I don't know if I saw that. All right, we better move on because I think it is now time for Dumbass's Masturbation, brought to you by the Dumbass Media.
The Amateur Skeptics present Ian's Masturbation Moment, brought to you by the Dumbass Media Empire. The Dumbass Media Empire, bringing you content that touches people while they touch themselves.
Woo! That's the sound I make when I orgasm.
Oh, really? That's weak. I'm not slut shaming. I'm just saying that you could do better.
You're right. I've got to work on that.
It might be better than the grunting and passing out that I do, but whatever.
Well, this article that I put in here has nothing to do with grunting and moaning techniques, but it is about masturbation, specifically male masturbation. It's from WebMD. 5 things you didn't know about male masturbation.
And do I not actually not know any of these?
I was a little bit surprised. I suppose it makes sense, but okay. I mean, it's not completely... rah-rah pro masturbation, which is unusual for us since we're usually that way, but you know, it's not bad on masturbation or anything.
Okay, well, what do you got for me?
But the first one, masturbation doesn't have the health benefits that sex does, which when you think about it, it does kind of make sense.
Okay.
I mean, like, I do like to push masturbation as not necessarily taking second fiddle to sex, but it does make sense that the intimacy and closeness of having a partner will have a lot more benefit than just, you know, getting pleasure on your own.
There's certainly some release of hormones and stuff you get from having a partner that you're probably not getting on. That's probably true.
The benefits of intercourse are it benefits your blood pressure, your heart and prostate health, also pain and more.
Okay.
Apparently, masturbation does not have the same effects.
But
although
I think
it does have positive health benefits.
I think the thing to remember though is that I mean masturbation is still important, even if it lacks some of the benefits that you get from a partner. If you're not interested in a partner, that's fine too. I mean, I think that these kinds of things we aren't necessarily doing for the health benefits anyway, right? We're doing for our own personal pleasure, and that's perfectly fine. It doesn't have to have a whole bunch of other benefits, for, you know, to remember that that these things are okay and they're good for you regardless.
The note on that though is that if you happen to be an energy vampire, you will not find masturbation to be nearly as filling as you would sex with a partner.
There you go. Unless that partner is a better energy vampire than you, in which case
that is true,
because that didn't work out so well for him.
No, energy vampires can drain other energy vampires.
Yep, they certainly can. Yep. All right, what do we got next?
Point number two: masturbation is not risk free.
Huh?
Well, it's low risk, and it is the safest form. I'm not sure why they go into like detail about this. I guess that just pointing it out, but. Basically, you can cause minor skin irritation, and forcefully bending an erect penis can rupture the chambers that fill with blood.
Okay, but that has nothing to do with masturbation.
I mean, if you're doing it, like, really forcefully, I suppose.
I guess
that's more about your technique.
Yeah.
You really shouldn't be, like, doing that. Maybe if you're into pain, you might be, but...
You can break your penis.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And then you end up in the hospital on a full penis cast.
Apparently, it can happen after vigorous masturbation. And it can need surgery to repair it. So, try not to get too wild, but mostly it's risk-free.
And skin irritation can be fixed with lube.
Yeah.
Definitely.
But there is one potential aspect of masturbation that is not risk-free, and you should be extremely cautious while doing this. Don't do a carotene on yourself.
Well, I mean, that's not strictly about the masturbation either. Once again, yeah, that's technique.
That is true. Yeah, just don't pull a David Carradine.
Yeah. Ooh, sorry, children.
Okay, point three.
Do you actually think there are children listening to this podcast?
Oh, God, I probably not, but I, you know, you can only hope. Like squirreled away from, like, their parents don't know it, and they're like, listening to, you know, our crappy podcast. It's the one that got through the Apple sensors, and so they were able to get it.
And remember, kids, eat your broccoli. Anyway, there is no normal amount of masturbation. This is one thing that I think this can affect women, too. There can be some sort of sense that a certain amount of masturbation is normal, and anything that's off of that is abnormal, and you should feel ashamed of it.
So is this the same kind of thing as that stupid thing that the stupid research that I went through the other week that claimed that basically, you know, that was looking at the shame factor and stuff like that, right? So if you think you're masturbating too much, it can cause a level of shame, and it's important to remember that's just not the case. But this can, but then once again, we can you know, this can come back to, you know, religion and other you know, other, I don't know, mainly religion that tells you that you're not supposed to masturbate and that it's bad. If you then it can cause problems because if you're doing it, and you know, and then it feels good, but then you remember this religious shame that you're supposed to have. It can cause problems, right? So it's same thing here.
Yeah, that's true. And also, you know, like as long as like if you have a good sex life and like if you're like masturbating a lot, there's nothing, no shame in that. Like, but you know, like if it's causing problems, like if you're like missing work or like, you know, like not spending time with your partner, choosing to masturbate instead, there might be some sort of underlying problem that you're not dealing with or something, right?
Right.
But you know, like that's the only maybe thing you should be concerned about. And some people might be concerned if they have a lower than normal sex drive, but there's nothing wrong with that either.
No, nope.
Couple points real quick.
I say lower than normal, but this is all about, there's no such thing as normal. But go ahead.
Okay, thank you. So first of all, if you're being affected by the shame, but shame is your kink, then definitely, you know, get ashamed.
Well,
secondly, if you find that you are missing work, move to Norway or Sweden or whatever country that is where they actually recommend masturbation sessions during the day while you're working.
Yeah,
is that like on a poster on the company wall?
All right.
Is there a graphic for that, like a la, you know, men's washroom stall type?
Oh no!
What do they call those?
Okay, time to move on. Bad imagery. Bad. All right, number four.
All right, number four. Masturbation does not reflect on your relationship, and we've always said this, of course. The most damaging myth about male masturbation is that it is a sign something is wrong in your relationship.
That's true. You know, somebody masturbates to, I mean, but I think the partners sometimes, you know, I think that they can feel like, if I'm not enough, if he's still masturbating, I think that there can be some stuff like that. So communication is still important. But no, it doesn't mean anything wrong in your relationship. Separate.
Yeah.
All right. What's number five?
It's normal. Oh. And masturbation is almost certainly good for your sex life.
What's the rationale?
And I think that's I think this counts for women as well as men. It's how you learn what you like during sex.
And being able to, knowing how you get off can help a partner get you there.
And apparently, stopping masturbation can be a sign of anxiety or health problem. Like if you stop doing it all of a sudden. But of course, you know, like that would be if you're tracking that.
Well, you know, I put it in my calendar, so yeah.
You got the app?
I got an app.
There's an app for that.
What could possibly go wrong? It's written by some Chinese company. They're probably not spying on it. Right? All right, you guys ready to move on? Should we talk about?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Okay, so Stop What? Have you guys? So this is a scam, and I'm gonna call it an outright scam.
And Elon Musk is involved, huh?
He's not.
It's a bunk.
That's part of the scam. So this device, and we may have talked about a device like this before.
I've seen it advertised.
Yeah, it's advertised a lot, and so I saw an advertisement not too long ago saying that you know this was endorsed by Elon Musk. It was invented by Tesla. Big shocker, it was not invented by Tesla. Elon Musk has nothing to do with this product, and it doesn't work and couldn't possibly work. It's so stupid. The idea that you're going to plug this in and what it's going to do is normalize your power so you use less of it, that it makes no sense. I mean, in, you know, most households, I mean, if anything, at best, it could be a surge protector, right? And it probably doesn't even do that well. And it's got a small circuit board in it and a couple of other little things. And at worst, it could create more resistance in the power and use more, right? So there's always a potential that could happen as well. And I guess the idea, people are saying 90% or and some of these like really outlandish that it could save money. It's crazy. Like, I know that in my house, the majority of my electricity is the air condition, right? I know I know for sure, I could probably shut everything else off and save $50, right? It's the, or not even, it's air conditioning. How's this little box gonna help my air conditioner? It can't. And it's been advertised under lots of different names over the Power Saver Pro, which is the one I think we reported on. Even Nikola Tesla himself. Yeah, whatever. So I think this product has had multiple different advertisements over the years. And so now what they're doing is that, they give it a new name and they either attach it to Elon Musk or Bill Gates or Mark Cuban. Yeah, as promoting, inventing, or whatever, and they'll and the ads are so bad, they'll say as reported on CNN, ABC, Fox News.
Brian, I was feeling pretty skeptical of this device until you said it had circuitry.
Oh,
now I'm thinking about getting one.
No, okay. What are you gonna do with it?
Because you remember that necklace that seemed like it was all pseudoscience until we reported that it had circuitry in it.
Things that have
circuitry in them, they work.
Oh, really?
Otherwise, they wouldn't have circuitry.
So I found you can go right now and buy this crappy thing on Amazon. And I reported it as a scam. It probably won't help, but I reported it. And I started reading the reviews of this thing. This is how it says as watts. Stopwatt energy saving device stabilizes the voltage, balance, and current. You don't need to say all three. And surge protection. The power and energy saver can also improve the use of electrical appliances power, avoid waste of electronic individuals, thus extending the service of the life of your electrical product. So it can extend the life of your product too.
Of course, the reason that these aren't already implemented into our current electronics is because they want to charge us extra for electricity.
Right, exactly. Power companies are preventing electronic companies, putting this crap in there. Yeah, right. We already have this crap. You already have it. You probably have power strips all over the house. Some people already have whole house surge protectors, right? And so that prevents, that will protect your appliances from spikes. Right, most current in most people's houses is pretty good anymore. But if you have a lot of brownouts and spikes, then you can condition power in your house not with this device, but with batteries. Right, this is what a UPS does, an uninterruptible power supply, where you're always running off of the battery side. Like all my computers are running off of batteries, right? And so if there's a surge or a brownout on the other side of the battery, I will never feel it, right? My device is never going to feel it because I'm running off of the battery, which is a nice consistent power. And so, but it is possible to have dirty power in your house. This device isn't going to help you, right? If you have spikes and brownouts and a lot of noise in your power lines, the way you fix that is with a battery. This device is not capable of doing both. It could prevent a surge, but it's not going to be able to stabilize the power beyond that. You need a UPS. You need a battery to do that. This is a complete fraud.
I've actually tried battery, Brian. Last time something wasn't acting the way it was supposed to, I hit it a couple of times. It actually worked worse.
Okay. I'm talking the kind of battery that's in your phone, Mac. Not a Sultan battery.
Well, hold on. The battery in my phone is made of lithium, which is a metal salt.
Oh boy.
That is a salt and battery.
But anyway, so these devices are being these scams. People are buying this crap, and it's cheap, right? You can get four from $23, right? So while it's not going to break the bank, this particular version of it, it's of no value whatsoever. It's not going to do what it claims it's going to do. It couldn't do it. Physics doesn't work this way. But most of the things are, you know, one review says careful. He says this is a four-star review. One of the ones he got was bad. So he bought six and one didn't work. Well, okay. I mean, it's an electronic device. That can happen. Here's another one. 5 stars. And listen to this garbage. Not sure if it works. Not expensive. So you gave something 5 stars that you don't know for sure whether or not it works. This is bullshit. This right here should be reported. This is not a real person. This is a bot.
Yeah, no, I think some people just are that, like, empty-headed that they'll post something like that.
30 days to save 25% savings. Nope, you didn't. You're a liar. This is a scam. I mean, but the reviews are not gushing or anything like that, but they're misleading, and some of them are 5-star reviews that say nothing.
Right.
We've saved $150 in what time frame, and what else did you turn off, right? You know, we put this in front of our microwave. The microwave doesn't work. We saved $150. And the appliance doesn't work anymore. I mean, I don't know what's going on, but all of these ones that say they save money as money are liars, or they're making other changes at the same time to serve power, you know, save power. They bought this device and replaced all of their incandescent bulbs with LED. I mean, that could work, right? You could potentially save money.
The math on this sounds an awful lot like that app you can install that will pay you back money for the gasoline you. And that sounds really good. The advertisements sound excellent. Until you actually do the math on how much gas you would have to be buying in order to get the amount that they're getting back.
Yeah, I don't know what app this is, but it doesn't. It sounds like a scam.
That just sounds like a rewards program.
It gives you 6 cents back per gallon. I mean, you've got people who are talking on the ad about making $30 to $100 a week, and I'm like, okay, so how much are you spending on gas in order to do that?
Well, I mean, it's the same thing with like the Shell app and stuff like that. You can get those apps and those reward programs, but how do they make up that money that you save by selling your data or sending you advertising, right? Believe me, you're paying a lot more than 6 cents for that, you know, that you're saving on gas, you know? I mean, you're not saving anything with the reward programs either, have you?
Oh, no, and a lot of times how they get you is just the fact that, like, they're giving you rewards and they're giving you coupons for going in. So they're just making you go in more often just because you're like, oh, that's a good deal. Oh, and I'll get some extra rewards on that. And you're like, man, right, I'm spending more than I usually would.
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing is that if you bought something because you had a coupon that you weren't normally going to buy, you didn't save any money. You spent money, right? I mean, that's the problem that sometimes see with coupons.
I mean, true enough, but sometimes it's a case of where, like, you know, like, I want to treat myself, but I only want to spend this much money on treating myself. Oh.
That's different, though. You wanted to treat yourself, and you found a coupon that enabled you to do
it. You did save money on treating yourself.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with that, right? I'm just saying that if it's something you wouldn't have bought otherwise, you know, without that coupon, you spent money, you didn't save anything.
Now, like, in terms of your overall budget, yes.
Yeah, exactly, right? That's what I'm getting at. So, I mean, and certainly, you know, coupons are good. And sometimes, you know, hey, coupons can encourage you to try something you wouldn't normally try, and that can be a good thing, right? But if you want to save money, the coupon isn't necessarily the way to do it. Only if you use a coupon for something you would normally buy are you going to save money. Is I guess what I'm getting. The article that I put in here gives you a whole bunch of ideas on how you could actually reduce, you know, your how much energy you're using in, right? And there are ways you can do that, and I think there are good things. I think putting in LEDs instead of incandescents, right? And reducing other power needs of your house, right? I mean, sealing up, the insulation in your home or putting more insulation in your home can work, but I mean, only if it's sealed up properly. I mean, that there are caveats, right? But this little device, this is like selling you a pill that says that it's going to, you take this pill and you live 10 years, right? Oh, I don't have to do anything but take that pill, right? That's the kind of mindset here. Oh, this is going to, I'm going to save 25% of my, like, on my electricity bill just by plugging this same thing in for $30. That's easy. I'll do that, right? And not thinking it through. I don't know. It's just a matter of, I mean, we're not teaching critical thinking skills. Because if you really think about it, how could this possibly work? It just doesn't make any sense. It's a scam.
Right.
And if you thought about it for 5 minutes, you'd probably work it out and go, wait, how the heck would it do that? How's it going to make the power more efficient somehow? That just doesn't make any sense.
As you don't know very much at all about electricity or anything and just have a conspiracy mindset, I guess it kind of makes sense. But
so now they're going to scam my mother is what you're telling me.
They already have, Brian. They're in your house.
All right. What do you got for me, Mac?
So I came across this article. It was talking about animals showing imagination. What they're actually doing is they essentially manage to figure out a way to show that rats have spatial thinking in their thought process. Because of how they were able to measure the information coming from the hippocampus,
are they putting some sort of probe in the brain, or how are they measuring that?
Well, I was thinking just ask the rats, but they use some sort of a virtual reality situation.
Okay,
and the fact that they've got spatial memory indicates that they've got the ability to basically imagine doing things. Imagine, or they're able to visualize doing things that they're not actually doing. So they can do things, they can basically imagine doing things at places other than where they're actually at.
So, I mean,
they also were able to determine that the hippocampal activity is sustained for extended periods, which means that they're thinking that means that rats are actually reliving things that they've done or imagining new things that they want to do.
Okay. I mean, does this help? I mean, like, can we observe this, like, in the way that they do mazes and stuff like that? Like, you know, once they get through it the first time, they can do it the next time, get to the end or get to the food without going through the whole maze. I mean, how is this represented in their behavior?
I imagine that what you just said about the mazes is one of the ways it would be represented, but it would also be represented in their problem-solving skills.
Okay.
In other things like, you know, just getting out of their enclosure.
Okay, I see. So the idea that once they figure out where the weak spot in the enclosure is, they'll continually go back to that. They think that that's part of their spatial memory. That's not just they learn, you know, so it's more than just getting lucky.
It's more than just getting lucky.
Okay.
You know, and I saw something else this weekend, and I need to find out more about this, but they're basically saying that squirrels are actually far more intelligent than rats are.
I mean, right off the cuff, I'm not terribly surprised by that. And I think part of that is watching them do those mazes and stuff like that. And, you know, and I realize that, and sometimes, you know, that we watch the end product of that, and you know, it takes a little time to train them to do each piece of some of those mazes. But in the end, they're able to get through them pretty successfully.
You're talking about the squirrels in mazes or the rats in mazes?
The squirrels, right? Watching, like, if you watch Mark Rover's stuff on YouTube, he did several years in a row, he built the squirrel mazes, and you know, he figured out which nut they like best.
I once saw a short documentary that a guy did about, not about how he trained squirrels to follow mazes, but about all the things he tried to do to keep squirrels off his bird feed. He documented it in video and in how they overcame each step that he took.
Yeah, and it's really cool. Mark Rover did a similar thing, you know, with his, and he finally, at some point, he just gave up and gave it to the squirrels. They defeat everything.
I know that there have been, zookeepers will tell, like, certain animals just have, like, an incredible knack for trying to find ways out of their cages and stuff. Like, I know, like, orangutans are supposed to be, like, really smart, and you have to, like, really keep an eye on them that they don't circumvent the systems that you put to keep them in place.
I imagine that that's a constant thing, right?
There was a story about a honey badger.
Oh, God.
That kept slipping it. Kept slipping it.
Uh-oh.
Sounds like Mad Cat's here.
Yeah.
Sorry, I went for a nap and it turned out to be a couple hours.
I see.
Mad Cat showed up like wham.
Exactly.
Yep.
So anyway, this honey badger kept slipping out of its enclosure, and they kept changing the way that the gate worked, and the honey badger would, within like a week, figure out the new thing it needed to do in order to get out. So they
and then they got a female thinking that would help.
Yep.
Yeah, because they thought he was just bored. No, he used the female to climb out the next
time. She became an accomplice.
Yeah, she helped. Yeah.
She helped.
Yep.
Yeah, the honey badger is an amazing problem solver as well. I think a lot of these, a lot of mammals. I mean, raccoons are incredibly good problem solvers. So a lot of them out there. So the idea that they'll have some sort of spatial memory doesn't
suppose. Plus, you know, raccoons' ability to build hyper-advanced technological weapons out of spare parts is well-documented.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Yeah, and talking others into taking people's eyes.
Are you going to let dumbass talk? Are we going to let dumbass? he's got cut up three times now.
I was just going to say that us Canadian, Gen Xer and Millennial children, will already have known that animals have imagination. We have the show in Canada to bring all of this demographic big nostalgia called The Polka Dot Door. And there was this character on there called the Pokaroo, who was basically a polka-dotted kangaroo. And every episode, one of them would come out and talk to the it could only say Pokaroo. And they'd do a song about imagining what the Pokaroo can do, because the Pokaroo is imagining. Imagine, you can imagine Pokaroo flying up high. You know, something like that?
And falling on his head.
So we already knew.
Oh, yeah, we knew that at least polka-dotted kangaroos had imagination.
Yeah, no, that's great. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know, we Americans, we'll catch up eventually. All right, what do you got for me, dumbass?
Ah!
10 pseudoscience hoaxes. This ought to be good.
That's right. They got a list of 10 of them here. I thought we'd just go through them and have a look and just talk about each one. Some of these are, like, really old ones. I like the really old ones. Because those are fun to see what they did in the past, and we're starting off with number 10, the canals on Mars.
Yeah, so what's the idea? I think there was an idea that there was a canals on Mars for moving water around that they thought.
Right. This is astronomer Percival Lowell. I think what we've basically figured out now that he was probably just because, like, he's staring long and hard at the planet Mars and seeing, like, these really small details. He's probably just seeing a lot of the veins in his own eyeball reflected in the glass there, and that's why he saw canals and even mapped them out and everything. But this is one of those fun pseudosciences because it inspired a lot of science fiction and a lot of basically a lot of the way we think about worlds in our solar system and stuff, and like a lot of ideas out there.
This is one that's been replaced though with the face on Mars,
right?
the H is on the moon.
Was the face on Mars thing started by Weekly World News, or was that like a thing from before then?
Oh, no, I think that is the king of bullshit from the UK. What's his name?
Andrew Wakefield?
No, not Andrew Wakefield. That he pretty much does medical pseudoscience. What is his name?
You got confused when you said king of bullshit from the UK.
Yeah, he's everywhere. What is his name? We've talked about him so many times. I just can't remember his
name. Well, we'll get to Andrew Wakefield later, at least, anyway.
Oh, okay, we'll get there. Yeah, yeah. And the guy that I'm thinking of might be in this list somewhere, right? I mean, are we going to talk about reptilians or anything like that?
Well, let's see. Well, the next one we've got is phrenology.
I know this one because I learned it. Do you remember Men at Work? There's a movie called Men at Work. And what I remember that what I learned about phrenology was that phrenology was when you feel and interpret the lumps on Walt's asshole.
You know,
whose asshole?
Walt's. Well, it was Walt's asshole.
There may not be phrenology, but retrophrenology is actually a working science.
Well, no, but that's not what actually. This is actually feeling and interpreting the bumps on somebody's head.
Yeah, retrophrenology is creating bumps on somebody's head to modify their behavior. Yeah. That's actually a science.
The thing that I like about phrenology is that the idea isn't completely out there, because it's based on the idea is that certain parts of your brain control certain things, and they can get more or less developed. And the idea is that your skull would conform to those areas, and you'd be able to feel where, you know, parts were more developed than others and stuff. And now we have since learned that the brain is categorized into different areas that control different things. Although the two parts where this fail is one, that does not equal like bigger parts in certain areas depending on what kind of personality you have. And the second part is that even if that did, your skull doesn't conform to every bump in your brain. So it doesn't give any. The shape of your skull doesn't give any kind of indication as to what's going on underneath.
If you look at the inside of the cranium, right, you can see we can tell how much folds there were in the brain, or whether they have a smooth brain. We can tell a lot, you know, about the complexity of the brain that was housed inside of there by looking at the inside of the skull. But none of that is reflected on the outside of the skull. Right. I mean, it's not like, right. Yeah, it just doesn't conform that way. Otherwise, you'd feel a whole bunch of swirls on
right.
the top of
and
your
even
head.
If like, yeah. And even if you got like a good image of a person's brain, you can't really tell from that anything about their personality or anything.
No, there's That's a lot true, more right? inside there than just squigglies.
Yep. This next one, mm-hmm. I had this done when I was a
teenager.
Yeah,
this is one that is still used today.
Yeah. So iridology.
Yeah, you had it done when you were what?
When I was a teenager. So I was a dyslexic as a kid. I'm still dyslexic. It's never gone away. And so my mom tried all sorts of pseudos, right? And one of the people that she took me to that was supposed to help me did iridology. And so they take a picture of your eye, and then they blow that up, and they look at it, and it's like astrology on the eye. Is essentially what it comes to. They're right. looking for, you know, they're making references to different things in the eye and stuff like that. And of course, you know, the thing is that the pictures are cool, right? Because you've got to take a high, you know, and at the time it wasn't really high dev, but it was pretty good. But you take a picture of the eye, right? So you have a special camera that I'm pretty sure it's a special camera that focused in on the eye, and then you blow that picture up, and you could look at that picture. And so you get the eye is like a really cool thing to look at anyway, and the structure, and you can see capillaries and all sorts of stuff going on in the eye. So in that sense, it's kind of a cool thing in that we were getting these high definition pictures of the eye. But what's not so cool about it is that when you try to interpret somebody's personality or other things based on what you're seeing. And isn't that what they're suggesting you're doing here? I have not read.
Yeah, it's basically what you're saying.
Okay.
I guess there are probably like different schools of thoughts on it. Just like pretty much any of these things, they probably have like different interpretations. You really can't diagnose things through iridology. It's just a way of getting people's money.
But looking at the eye is a way for you that an actual doctor could gauge your health, right? I mean, they can see things like diabetes and that kind of stuff in the eye. I mean, there's actual utility
eye doctors can look at your eye and find out lots of stuff, people who know what they're doing.
Right, exactly. The problem with the interpretations is that, you know, every astrologer I ever met would you could look at some sort of pairing and every single one of them would give you a slightly different interpretation. Same thing here, right?
Astrology doesn't even astrologers don't even need to know how to look at the stars and see what stars are out there and what they're seeing. They just need to know how to read a chart.
Right, exactly. Yeah, yeah, exactly. That all you need is an ephemeris to put that stuff together.
So you don't even need to have any like actual astronomical knowledge.
Nope, none whatsoever.
Except for how like it relates to where the position is towards Earth on a chart.
Okay, you can keep insulting me all you want.
Birthday, by the way.
Oh, thank all you.
Right, you
thank
fucking
you.
Fucking piece of shit.
Oh, what's the next one here? What's number 7? Spiritualism and the Fox Sisters? Okay, this one I actually might not know. What is this?
Well, this is another historical one. Well, you know about the big thing of spiritualism back in like this is from 1848, you know, the last part of the 1800s, early 1900s.
Are these the ones that what were they that were I wonder if they're who's the guy who wrote Sherlock Holmes? Are these the women that scammed?
No.
Oh,
no, that was the Cottingley fairies.
Right. Yeah, yeah, okay, that was the fairies. Yeah, okay.
But the Cottingley fairies were definitely a part of this whole spiritualism kind of milieu.
Okay.
Oh,
I like that. Yeah, good job on good choice of words there.
Thank you.
There.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm using the $50 words today.
ooh, almost France.
So okay, so what is this particular?
So this was one of the things. The Fox Sisters became a big hit. Their house, the family believed they were communicating with some spirit in the house via raps, that the strange bumping noises that the girls were making, and it quickly, you know, went out of control and became like this thing, and they had a traveling stage show as mediums contacting the dead and everything. But yeah, it set off this whole thing, and it's kind of funny when you think about old spiritualism and the stuff that they believe that today, you know, isn't as much of a big thing. Like we still do seances today, but it's seen as kind of like cute and kitschy, you know, like not as seriously as they used to take it back. The big seance days where they had like the turn off all the lights and the like sounds and movements and like a whole performance of it, where the idea of ectoplasm came from then.
Okay, but what grew out of this that is prevalent now are these people who will talk to the dead for you, that, you know, you go and
right. Yeah, it was a different kind of show than the modern ones, but yes.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you don't do a seance anymore. You go and, is it Mark Edwards or who is it? Who was it that, yeah, you know, that you go and will talk to the dead for, you know?
Yeah.
I'm getting somebody with a name that starts with an S.
Exactly, right? So it's
a Sam or a Sandra.
Yeah, so, oh, it's a mediums. That's what we are. Yeah, mediums. You know, that's what, and now we've got just a deluge of mediums that, you know.
Yeah, they're never big or small. They're always medium.
Yeah, but, you know, and so, I mean, it goes on today, right? I mean, what was her name?
The one who dressed up.
Yeah, the one that Montel Williams
with the hair
made
and everything
famous.
And the.
Oh, you're talking about the Long
fingernails?
Island medium.
Long Island medium.
Yeah,
yeah.
So she's more modern, and even before her is the woman that talked with the husky voice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, and Montel Williams made her a thing. And of course, I mean, Miss Cleo and some of these psychic lines. Mm-hmm. I mean, these scams persist today in different forms, right? They're still taking your money.
You know, Brian, as dogs go, huskies do have a pretty understandable voice.
I do have a sense of nostalgia for those late 90s commercials about the psychic hotlines.
Like the one that that Mac and I used to work for?
Just like those, yes.
Yeah, yeah. We got stories.
Yep.
Homeopathy.
That's right. We've covered homeopathy several times before.
Because it doesn't go away.
Yep. I mean, like, yeah, they sell it at Shoppers Drug Mart, and yep, it's basically just sugar pills. Yeah, for anybody hearing about it for the first time, created by this man named Hahnemann, he just decided out of the blue for no reason whatsoever that something that causes the same symptoms as an illness can cure it, but you have to dilute it until like there's no more of the substance left, and the water has a memory of that substance. But and you also have to like hit it several times, you know, between each dilution.
You've got to take your leather Bible and you got to bash it against the leather.
I believe it was originally a leather saddle over a pile of hay or something.
You could use your Bible, your leather-covered Bible. It's fine. But here's the thing. I will
I
say
don't
this.
Know. It might depend on what you use to hit it against, how effective it is.
I'll say this for Hahnemann. At the time that he was promoting this, you could either have the homeopathy cure or lead and mercury, and I know which one is worse, right? I mean, from that perspective, he might have saved lives.
True enough.
While the true practitioners of medicine actually used leeches.
Oh, well, okay, sure.
Much healthier for
you. Yeah, well, I mean, leeches probably aren't going to kill you unless they take too much blood,
I mean,
right?
They're the only way to balance your humors when you
well,
have too much of the
that,
blood
that's
humor.
That's true, yeah. The ones that go up your nose to get the extra snot, though, those are...
Ew.
Is that not how you use your leeches?
Okay. Lying right on your back, tossing salt in the nose.
Reflexology, which is only like one like very small step from homeopathy.
Yeah, yeah. I think reflexology is on a spectrum with other things like acupuncture and different types of like those charts with the outline of the chi lines throughout your body or whatever.
Occasionally called zone therapy.
Yeah.
What zone?
Yeah, the idea that you can like massage certain places, hands and feet, and that they'll kind of like work somehow on your internal organs in order to do good things to them. You know, you need proper stimulation, apparently. It is kind of weird.
Yeah, I mean, certainly though, a foot rub can feel good, right? But yeah.
I mean, I guess I have no complaint as to the technique itself. I mean, like, you're probably just spending money, if you're spending money on it, just to get a little hand and foot massage. And if that feels nice, I have no problem with that.
Right. But I think that reflexology costs more than a foot rub. And they're
probably
the same thing, right? I mean, the amount of bullshit you put behind it allows you to charge more.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, next one is one of my old favorite that I've talked about before when I did my other show, but it still has a special place in my heart. The ancient aliens, astronaut or ancient aliens, and there are so many aspects of it to cover. But pyramids aren't actually tombs; they're really, you know, like whatever, built by aliens in order to announce they were here or something. They have some sort of secret message, whatever it is.
Well, yeah, they were talking about the fact that the octopus people helped us build the pyramids and we didn't help at all.
We had no clue about that.
Well,
it's amazing.
People, not the lizard people?
Well, no. The lizard people are different. The thing that really gets me about this, and you're right that the reptilian people, you know, do correlate with some of the alien UFO stuff as well. But it's kind of insulting to the Egyptians and stuff like that. Because we think of these people as being primitive, but they weren't less intelligent than we are. They had less knowledge, right? Because we have a lot of knowledge that we've put together, in the thousands of years since, you know, all this was happening. That we can build upon, right?
Yeah.
But they were lacking that knowledge base. They weren't necessarily less intelligent, and we're intelligent people. They're intelligent people. They can figure shit out, right? They invented the fulcrum, which we still use today, right? I mean, we.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, but this and so David
yeah,
Icke
I mean,
is the guy
a lot
that I was thinking of.
Professions. I don't know exactly how they do what they do.
Sure, but so David Icke is the guy who has promoted a lot of this kind of crap. And I've got how to spot reptilians running the U.S. government, right? And this is all David Icke bullshit. And a lot of these ancient alien crap. He's the king of bullshit that I was trying to remember.
Isn't the way to spot reptilians
running
the U.S. government by the really bad toupee?
don't insult the reptiles.
Yeah, right. Yeah, stop picking on reptiles. He's not a reptile. He's
like
just
people.
A piece of shit. All right. Conversion therapy. Oh, my God. This is actually might be the worst one on the list because of the damage this does to somebody by telling them that there's something wrong with you for loving the person you love. I'm sorry, I interrupted.
Yeah, it's definitely the most harmful among all of them. And I guess it's a different kind of beast than the other ones on this list because the other ones are less actively harmful, but it does bring. Bear mentioning, calling to attention that this practice is bullshit. It's just trying to say, oh, there's something wrong with these people and we can fix them. It's like desperately hoping that they can make these people quote unquote normal, and it just doesn't work.
It's really unfortunate the harm that this one does. And maybe we could measure harm from the rest of these, but the direct harm of this one is what just gets me. How insulting is this to tell somebody that there's something wrong with you for who you love or who you feel attraction? It's just wrong on the face of it. And this idea that the fear mongering that goes into it, you know, that convinced these people that, you know, that to try this conversion therapy, right? Because they love the wrong person. I don't know. This one gets me pissed.
And you don't think that number one's a bigger harm?
I'm not sure.
Okay, we'll get the I just went down. Nope, that it not necessarily. This one harms fewer people in a harsh way, and I don't know. And so yeah. But anyway, let's go on to number two, my favorite, astrology.
Oh, astrology, yes. This one much more frivolous. I know that as a child, I used to get little astrology things to figure out my sign and what my future entails and what kind of people I'm compatible with and stuff. It's one of the very fun ones that you just, like, I guess you just kind of grow out of when you get into skepticism and stuff.
I would say that the worst harm this ever did to me is it kept me from getting a date. And that was probably for the best. She didn't like my chart, so, you know, that it just couldn't go any further. Probably for the best.
Uh-huh. But, you know, like, the imagery of astrology is a lot of fun. Stars and moons on things and, like, constantly. I mean, the charts look so interesting.
It's a good-looking pseudoscience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is a good-looking pseudoscience. That is a beautiful pseudoscience.
In some ways.
You want to just, like, you want to ensconce yourself in its imagery.
Yeah.
It really, really fucks over the people born under the sign of a Pisces, though.
There's a lot of documentation and stuff that people have written behind it, right? I mean, how to read charts and, you know, to do all these things and you know, how grand trines, grand squares and all this stuff in your chart. I mean, there just is there's a lot of documentation behind this particular science, right? It's fascinating just how many books on astrology you can go start reading. And, you know, and astrology and dating and, you know, and it's pinned to everything.
Like numerology, it has a mathy feel to it.
Yeah, it does, exactly. Numerology. But I would guess off the top of my head that there's probably been more books written on astrology than numerology. But certainly numerology has, I mean, that there's a lot there too. They're the most sciencey of the pseudosciences, for sure. Okay, and then the final one, and Mac is probably right, this probably has done way more harm than number three.
I mean, I guess number three, the gay conversion therapy, is a lot more viscerally harmful to fewer people than number one, vaccine hesitancy. But, you know, like, it affects the lives and well-being of a lot more people. So I guess that makes it more harmful on a whole than gay conversion therapy.
The vaccine denying, though, doesn't really have the long-term effect that conversion therapy does, simply because vaccine denial usually ends up killing the person instead. So,
yeah. I was looking up the Jenny McCarthy body. Is that site still up? What are we up to?
Yeah.
So this says that, you know, this says that 15,000 people, it's got to be high. This was, so the last time that this was actually done was July 3rd, 2007. Oh, this says from June 3rd, 2007 to July 18th, 2015, that 152,000 people are basically were killed by not getting him. And well, so they, you know, this site hasn't been kept up with.
You know what happened to this? You know what happened to the count on this is that when 2020 and 2021 rolled around, they actually, the guy who was doing this, would have actually had to invent a new type of math in order to keep track.
Yeah, right. Well, luckily the CDC did that for him. We can't keep track. And of course, we can't, we don't know how many of those people died because they didn't get the vaccine, because so many people died before the vaccine was even available. But we know that, I mean, it's probably millions of people were that didn't have to die, died during that.
Mm. And I guess a lot of this is probably a whole pushback, because doctors used to, like, be very guarded about what they tell people and not treat their patients as, you know, like, actual, like, treating them more like, do as I say, like a very paternalistic attitude, and not like treating them as people who are in on their whole treatment and how they want to live their lives and stuff. And so I think that that has kind of engendered a mistrust of the medical profession. You know, like, you're not telling me everything I need to know or whatever, right?
Yeah, I mean, this idea that they're hiding information from people. And the, I mean, we get so many different things. Like, I know a guy who still, to this day, believes that Bill Gates is putting microchips in vaccines.
Wow, that's an old one.
Yeah, but he, this came up, I learned this about him, like, during COVID, right? And he, because he wouldn't get the vaccine and all of this. And I, you know, and this kind of thinking is runs
so
strong.
Bill Gates personally is putting microchips in doses of vaccine.
Yeah. He's just like on the production line. He's the one guy that volunteered to do it. He's like got these little tweezers and.
Okay. Well, I guess that explains why he had to retire from Microsoft. No time.
But get this. So think about this. A vial has so many doses of vaccine in it, right? And if mm-hmm. and if you need to have, if it's ten doses, you've got to have 10 microchips in there. How do you know the microchip gets into one per dose when they pull it out of there?
Because when they put the hypodermic in there, it has a positive charge, and the negative charge of the microchips is attracted to it.
So all, but yeah, then the first person who gets a dose, we get all 10.
I assume that they make sure everything's all right. They just hold a thing up to it and it goes boop boop.
It's such a dumb conspiracy, right? I mean, because you only one person per that whole vial could possibly get the microchip. I mean, maybe two, right? I mean, it's just so stupid. All right. Well, I suppose
maybe that's the point.
Yep, I don't know. We got anything else on that?
Nope.
Yeah, look, I think that's it.
I think so. So I think on that disappointment, say goodnight.
Everybody. I don't know. Give
goodnight,
me
15, everybody.
Give me 15 minutes and goodnight. I'll figure out how they get a microchip in each dose. Oh, well, no, I didn't need 15 minutes. Oh,
okay.
The microchips are not in the doses. They're in the hypodermics.
All right. And we can end on that disappointment.
Yeah, and stick the microchips up your can.
Yep, and that is another, you know, funny thing about vaccinations. My pharmacy that I go to says that you can get all your vaccinations in one place, but I think that would make that arm really sore.
Yep.
Good night.
If you've made it this far, that's an hour of your time you're never getting back. But the amateur skeptics appreciate you giving that hour to us. If you'd like to tell us how you felt about spending that hour with us, let us know at WTF@amateurskeptics.com. The Amateur Skeptics Podcast is distributed under a Creative Commons Share Alike No Derivatives 3.5 license. Intro music by Peter Cannell. Find more of Peter's music at soundcloud.com/PKANOL. Exit music by OFM. Find more of their music at myspace.com/OFMHQ. Artwork for the Amateur Skeptics by Sean Smith Ford. Copyright Shadow Knight Digital Portraiture.